absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Hello, my name is Laurent Borgmann, and I would like to welcome you to episode 93 of our podcast, Absolutely Intercultural, the show that allows you to leave behind your everyday life and dive into a world full of intercultural experiences and differences. Now, even if we expect these differences when we travel or when we meet foreigners in our own countries, the best and the most intensive intercultural learning is always accompanied by small culture shocks. Our show today will focus on the Anna Lindh Foundation again, and in particular on two young influential bloggers from Israel and Tunisia, who I met in Luxembourg at the bloggers meeting. So our main topic will be on the blogging culture. I asked them what had made them want to start blogging in the first place. However, in our first category, Absolutely Confused, I met Erin, an exchange student from Texas, who tells us how she struggled with cultural differences in everyday life on her arrival in Europe.
The light turns yellow before it turns green, and then it turns yellow before it turns red. And in America, it only turns yellow before it turns red. So I was trying to figure out what that was. And
in our second category, Absolutely Half-Baked, Carmel Weissman, one of the most influential intercultural bloggers in Israel, told me why some stories may be too half-baked to be published in a magazine, but they may be perfect for a blog.
I don't think I would have written about it in a magazine because it's a half-baked story. This is why we have blogs, for half-baked ideas.
In our third and last category, Absolutely Writing, I made an interview with Sama Samir Mezgani from Tunisia, a very energetic young person who started writing children's books when she was a child herself. Why Sama was in the Guinness Book of World Records twice, you will hear later.
Now, I've published 14 books for children and almost written 100 of the stories, but most of the whole point of it was about children writing to children and young people writing to young people.
But let us start with the show. In our first category, Absolutely Confused, I met Erin from Texas, and she told me about her experiences she made in Europe and why she suffered a culture shock, or maybe several, at the beginning. She noticed that we use very different street signs and traffic lights from the US and that we drive such tiny cars. But also, the everyday behavior of people in the street struck her as rather different. When you meet Germans for the first time, they don't appear as friendly as Americans. But once you've got to know them as friends, it seems that you will never lose this friendship in your life. Let us hear what emotions Erin had and how she confronted the confusing situations.
I was born in Fort Hood, Texas, but I grew up in the military, so I've lived pretty much everywhere.
You have a lot of intercultural background.
Yes.
Maybe you can tell us about your experiences when you came to Germany.
I came to Germany February 16th. At first, I hated it, but I think it was just the cultural shock, you know. It wasn't America anymore.
And how far did you experience a culture shock? What was shocking?
Just everything was so little here. You know, the street signs were completely different. I didn't know what anything meant. All the cars were so tiny. We're used to huge cars in America. Just driving, the light turns yellow before it turns green, and then it turns yellow before it turns red. And in America, it only turns yellow before it turns red. So I was trying to figure out what that was. And just the fact that you can't use credit cards here, it's not very common. And in America, you use a debit card or a credit card for everything.
But how did that affect you emotionally? Do people have a different attitude from what you're used to in America?
Up front, they're not as friendly as in America. You know, when you're walking down the street, you just smile in recognition. Hey, there's a person.
But in America?
Yeah, in America. But here in Germany, they just kind of walk past you, going about their own business. I mean, you could even say hello to them and they just kind of look at you like, well, okay, I don't know you.
Okay, and but so you found that frustrating because you thought they don't like you or something.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
But at the same time, I found out, though, once you become friends with a German, they're very loving, you know. They love to get to know my culture as an American and everything. So once you get past that first initial meeting, they do open up and become your friend.
All right, yes. And then people say that once you're friends with Germans, then you stay friends with them for a long time or for your life.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. I can't exactly say that because I just met them, but Hopefully that'll stand.
As you heard, it takes Germans a little longer to open up to foreigners, whereas in the US, it seems much easier to get in contact with people. Now, some intercultural researchers describe this well-known phenomenon in a comparison with the fruits peaches and coconuts. So peach people are all nice, soft, smiling and sweet on the outside, and it is easy to get in touch with them and have a nice first conversation. But afterwards, you may hit a hard kernel in the middle, and this seems almost impossible to penetrate. These people may be very friendly when you meet them as complete strangers, for example, on public transport, but would perhaps not dream of letting you into their inner circle of friends or invite you to their family homes. On the other hand, you have the coconuts, who have their hard and sometimes unwelcoming shell on the outside. So when you meet them for the first time, they seem unfriendly and very reserved. However, once you have penetrated that hard shell, you will find that they are much softer and sweeter on the inside. Often, Germans experience Americans as peaches. But instead of enjoying that easygoing small talk with complete strangers, Germans sometimes misinterpret this sweetness as a sign of shallowness or superficiality. On the other hand, Americans often experience Germans as very hard and unfriendly when they have first contact. And subsequently, they're very surprised that once they have been properly introduced to these Germans, they open up and become their best friends. As you can see, it is not very easy to read the cultural signals in a foreign country correctly. You sometimes struggle with unusual habits or cultural diversities. But once you've passed this step and master your everyday life, you'll find new friends who perhaps will stay friends with you for the rest of your life. Now I would like to introduce you to Carmel Weismann, certainly a peach and a wonderful person, but also a communication scholar from Israel, who I met at the bloggers training in Luxembourg. Carmel is a passionate blogger, very busy sharing her very interesting experiences in Israel and abroad with others in the world. Most recently, we heard about her lost experiences in Hawaii. In our next category, absolutely half-baked, she told me an amazing story about a girl who was drowning in a river and nobody would help her.
Okay, I'm Carmel Weismann. I'm from Tel Aviv, Israel, and I was invited here to this intercultural dialogue group. I'm actually blogging about personal stuff, personal perspective, cultural things. I'm very rarely blogging about politics. And I think this is, you know, I live the feminist saying that the personal is the political.
All right.
And I think that...
So are you telling people stories about yourself or about something that you saw or that you read about?
Yeah, both. Not very, very personal about what I think, but things, different things, various things through my perspective. I write mostly about digital culture, spiritual awareness, traveling... stuff like that, life in Israel, you know, funny anecdotes. And for example, this one thing that is also a funny anecdote of living in Israel and a digital culture story. Around a month ago, there was this famous story that a girl almost drowned in the Yarkon River in the middle of Tel Aviv.
Oh,
and she, everybody was looking at her drowning, but nobody jumped to save her because the Yarkon River is notorious for its pollution, that people could die of cancer just to sip this water.
Really?
And people were afraid to jump. But this is not the thing. The thing is that all the people that looked at it and said, oh my God, and didn't jump, just took out their camera phones and started video blogging and filming this.
Right.
And then everybody in the media, of course, somebody just to know that there was a good... And somebody went jumped in, and she's totally fine, and he is fine, and everything is okay. But the story, the media was all about, I mean, people don't care. What do people do today? They just document things for fun.
Right,
to put
that
on
is
YouTube
interesting. So what did you blog about this?
Well, I had a different perspective as a digital culture expert. I was thinking that today we really experience through technology, not only through our bodies. You know, the old McLuhan saying that the technology is an extension of our senses. So today we when you really want to look at something, when you feel helpless that you can't help, but you want to warn, you want to care. Mm-hmm. So video blogging is a form of caring. You know, it's a form of, I was there, I'm informing people, it's a way of experiencing.
Do you
this.
Think the girl would agree with you here?
I don't know, but I think, you know, it's a new life. We have to see it this way, that it's not just non-morality among people. It's right. It's you see it in music concerts also. I bet you have it around Europe as well, that in every music concert, people hold up the phones. I was in the Depeche Mode concert in Israel, and I wrote about the fact that a couple that was standing near me, they were a couple. They were living together, and they both had phones, and they both tried to shoot right. it. And if it was just for documentation, you would let your husband with a better phone to document it and enjoy. But no, it's part of experience. I have okay. to lift it too. I have to feel and see through my phone.
Let me come back to this little incident on the river. Did you read about it, or how did you hear about it, or were you present?
No, I wasn't present. I wasn't video blogging it. But the media wrote about it. The whole thing, the news wasn't that she almost drowned. Right. The news was she almost drowned. Nobody tried cared. To save her, and mm-hmm. everybody tried to blog it.
So what made you sit down at your computer then to tell a different story?
I was wondering about that. I'm thinking about things like that. And it was after the Depeche Mode show. So it just became another stone in the wall of my mm-hmm. of my thoughts about how we deal with technology today. Right. So I'm writing about this interfaces between technology and daily life. Mm-hmm.
Do you think if you were a professional journalist, you would have written about it in a magazine? So is that the same impulse? And you use your computer and your blogging because that is readily available even at 11 o'clock at night?
I don't think I would have written about it in a magazine because it's a half-baked story. This is why we have blogs, for half-baked ideas. You know,
okay.
it's probably part of a larger theory that I would have. I would have to have a larger theory for a magazine. You know,
okay.
I have to have a layout of things. This is experimenting.
Right. So this sounds like a good title for a blog, a good name for a blog. Half-baked stories for yeah. you or something. Is that typical for the stories that you put out there?
Yes. I'm trying out ideas. Even academic ideas that I want people to hear them for the first time and say, wow, this is weird, or I like it. And before I start developing a thesis and trying it out, I'm trying the theory on people, you know.
And there you are absolutely right, Carmel. Not every story needs to be published by the press and written on paper. I also like your idea of using a blog to try out academic ideas and use the feedback from the community out there in order to refine the concept before you use it for a more substantial paper in a magazine. In any case, I think it is worth our readers' time to follow Carmel on her blog, because the stories you will find out there are equally entertaining and instructive. Please follow our link in the show notes. Now, in our last category, Absolutely Writing, I present you another really astonishing young blogger, Sama Samir Mezgani from Tunisia. She has been writing children's books since she was 10 years old. So at the time, she was a child herself. What an interesting idea to publish children's books written by other children who are barely older than the children who read the books. This way, Sama gained an entry into the Guinness Book of World Records as youngest writer in the world, and 2 years later as youngest, most prolific writer in the world. I also met Sama in Luxembourg, and when I did the interview, I realized the limitations of an audio interview. Sama is such an energetic person that you would at least need video to get a glimpse of how active she is in real life. But fortunately, I had the privilege to meet her in person and experience this bundle of energy. She told me about what kind of stories she writes about and what gave her the idea to write children's books and how she became a blogger.
I'm Samar Samir Mezgani. I'm 20 years old. I'm coming from Tunisia. But I'm also half Iraqi, half Tunisian. Mm-hmm. And I'm a psychology student, and I came for the bloggers training organized by the NLE Foundation because I think it's a unique opportunity for bloggers to learn from each other and network.
Right. So why did you start blogging in the first place? Have you done this for a long time?
Not really. I'm a really new blogger. I'm still learning a lot about blogging, but the whole idea of blogging came to my mind when I first realized that I'm not writing as much as I used to. So I used to write a lot of children books and stories, but then there was still little time to publish.
All right.
So I thought of blogging as an alternative solution.
Okay. So what kind of children's book do you write?
There are actually a lot of pictures, but it's more about the idea and the whole story itself. It's now I've published 14 books for children and almost written 100 of the stories, but most of the whole point of it was about children writing to children and young people writing to young people. So it was about the dialogue that you can have with people from with your age.
Can you give us an example of a story that you're using?
Most of the stories that I like, that I prefer for my stories, were the journeys stories. I have a lot of stories that talk about a journey, and most of them are symbolical. Most of them are actually about little stuff that we don't notice during our daily life, like a watch or a pen or you know, stuff that you wouldn't really notice, but then I can reflect the whole child's word in that thing and make him or make it take a journey and with a lot of adventures and, you know, funny moments and painful moments, and then take the kids through an emotional journey with within that journey.
What gave you the idea to write children's books at such an early age?
Well, exactly. There was no idea of writing children's books. It just came out, you know, spontaneously, because I was a child myself and I needed to express, I needed to build a bridge of communication with someone who is in my age, but in a different way, you know, besides playing games. So I thought of making my own game, and that was the story itself. And then just became more important for kids, because a lot of other youngsters and children became inspired and thought that they can also write children books.
So now you've gone from writing children's books to blogging. Now that must be a big step. Or can you use some of the qualities you acquired before for writing blogs nowadays?
Definitely. I think it could complete each other, because blogging now is more for young people, but I'm a young person myself, so it's still the direct dialogue, you know? On the other hand, what I can do is that I can get stuff from the experience that I had as a writer. Usually my posts are more written in an artistic way, and when you read them, you feel like this is someone who is a writer, you know? So this could help, because I think blogging is very interesting, and the content of a blog is important, but I think also the way you write and the style with which you write is also a very important thing to take into consideration.
Give us an example of what you're writing about today. Are you still writing about a watch, for example, and looking at the implications of wearing a watch?
Well, I wouldn't write about that nowadays in a blog, but what I would do is that when I travel for an intercultural experience and then I blog about it, I do not necessarily talk about it in general, but I would focus in some details that are more or less artistic, but also I would take the reader again on a journey, because I would jump from one space to another, from one time to another. I mean, in the blog itself.
Now, our listeners are all interested in intercultural dialogue because the podcast is called Absolutely Intercultural. What would you say, why should our listeners go to your blog and check it out? By the way, can they? In which language do you blog?
So far, I only blogged in Arabic, but I'm also thinking to blog in English, as you know, I think this is a better way to reach people. So my blog is on shababvoice.org. It's more about, it has a lot of intercultural topics on it. I think people would like to visit just to know more about a personal perspective of seeing things, of seeing people, of seeing cultures. And the other issue is not just about, it's not just an intercultural experience, but also it's about the way how we from the region where I come from see the Europeans or see the Americans, and that's also an important thing, because there's a lot of history and common understanding that are shown in the blog itself, and I think that's interesting to get to know.
And so we hope that Summer will make her young followers read many interesting stories on her blog and in her books. And while I'm sure the stories sound best in Arabic, I do keep my fingers crossed that we will get access to them in English soon. Please check out our own page at absolutely-intercultural.com in order to find out more information about our interviewees and to get in contact with us with comments about the show. Our next show will be coming to you from Anne Fox in Denmark on the 16th of October. Until then, bleiben Sie absolut interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.